pee. I see a legal car service company.
The podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to our listeners as you join us for something a little different. Firstly, Dom is not here today. He's in court. So I've roped in a ringer, our very own Kayleigh Picton, or as we know Kayleigh in the office, the boss. But that's not the only difference today. We also welcome two special guests to our podcast. We have Erica Bedford, an experienced junior over at King's Chambers, who really needs no introduction, and Sean Kyra, associate cost technical specialist and advocate over at Erwin Mitchell. And they've both joined us today to talk about something PIC has probably always been at the forefront of, women in costs. And several of our team actually attended the first Women in Costs seminar in January 2023. Certainly hope I've got the 2023 January date correct. I'm pretty sure that was correct.
Yeah, that's right.
So I suppose I'll start with what is probably the most obvious question for you, Erica, which is, what is the Women in Costs project?
Project's quite a nice way of looking at it, actually. What it is it's an incentive, and it's gathering together a group of like-minded people who are interested in learning about how to progress and how to empower themselves and how to make sure that they are thinking about their well-being in work and progressing themselves as forward in the capacity that they want to do. It's a positive and a collaborative environment that we're hoping to build, and a community that we're hoping to build to support people really in moving forward with their career paths, and also to equip them with developing certain skill sets which actually are pervasive, and it's not just going to hopefully improve their lives in terms of their working lives, but equip them with different skills that actually will be able to see them through their life generally in terms of building relationships and things like that. So I like the idea of a project. I think I prefer to call it a community.
And who initially sort of created the community? Whose idea was it to bring everybody together and push this forward?
It was mine. So it's something I'd had floating around my head for a number of years, really. Predominantly after I came back from maternity leave, I make no secret about it. I found it really hard. Found it really hard to go off on mat leave and then come back again. It was just difficult. And I turned to various different people in order to try and help me come back and manage that particular time in my life. And it just struck me for a while that there wasn't particularly anything out there immediately that attracted my eye that would answer some of the questions that I had, which is why I ended up seeing these different types of people. And then I just thought, you know what, it'd be really good. We need some kind of community building in the cost sphere so that it can champion women and address some of the challenges that they face. So I had this idea floating around in my head for a while, but I think like a lot of people, I just didn't have the confidence actually to take it forward immediately. And I was doubting myself, which is why it kind of sat in the percolator of my brain for a couple of years. But my personality type is very much like is that I'll ruminate on things and then I'll get to a point where I'm just fed up with myself and I get very frustrated with myself and then I go, ah, sod it, I'm just going to do it. So that's what I did. I got in touch with my clerk, Harry, Gary Young, and I said, I was like, oh, I've had this idea for a seminar that I want to give. Would you mind if I had conference room upstairs and can I have a couple of bottles of wine, because I think I can get maybe about 10 people. And Gaz is hugely supportive. He's an absolutely fantastic clerk, and he was like, absolutely not, we're not doing a conference room and we're not doing wine. This is an absolutely brilliant idea. I think it's fantastic. I think it's got legs. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hire out a venue in town and we'll market it. And I bet we'll get about 50 people. And I was like, oh, I don't think we're going to, it's the confidence thing again. I was like, oh, no, we're not going to do that. That's not going to be possible. But I was like, OK, let's go with it. And we did. And we sold out, I think, within about 48 hours of it being publicised and advertised on social media. And then I very happily and unhelpfully went and ruptured a disc in my spine, which necessitated spinal surgery. So I had to cancel that and we had to change the date. But what was quite useful was in changing the date, we managed to expand it because we had about, we'd sold out for 50 places and I think we had about 30 people on a waiting list. So we went to Manchester House and had a capacity of 120, I think it was. And then when we re-advertised that, we sold that out. I think it was in the space of about a week that time, and then still had more people on the guest list. And then Gaz managed to go and get some more space from somewhere. I'm not quite sure how we magicked this up. But in the end, I think we had about 140 people in the room for that first day, which we were absolutely thrilled about. We were so, you know, pleased that there'd been such an engagement from the COS community. And it seemed to really have struck a chord, I think, with a lot of people. I think a lot of people could resonate and empathize with what we were trying to do, which was something a little bit different. So we don't talk about costs law. You can actually come down to Women in COS and you can have nothing to do with costs, I think, and you find something from it. What we focus on is identifying soft skills that can be developed and then having people come and talk to us all about how to develop certain different soft skills. And then one of the other things that I was very keen on doing, and this is how I brought Sian into it, was I really want to champion young people coming through and give them opportunities to speak, which they wouldn't otherwise have that as a platform within our Rising Star. And then I also wanted to bookend that with highlighting somebody in the COS community who's in a leadership position, who again perhaps is doing wonderful things but doesn't necessarily have a spotlight shone on them. And I interview those when we get them at the end of the day, and we draw out the challenges they faced and how they've overcome them, just to give people a role model really, or highlight that there are these role models in the wider community for people to try and look up to and emulate. So again, building this community theory that I'm hoping that we're achieving. But yeah, so the Rising Star is how I got Sian on board, isn't it, Sian?
Yeah, exactly that.
As I said, Sian's been a client of mine for a number of years, and we particularly did the protected party assessments. Sian was and I were heavily involved in shaping those at the outset when they first came through. A lot of it was Sian's brilliant work, and that's how we particularly got good friends, didn't we? And yeah, it was just shortly after I'd been chatting to Gaz about this is what I want to do, and I was thinking at that time, you know, what do I want, how do I want this to look, how do I want to feel, who do we want to be on board? And I was just chatting away to you, wasn't I, one day, and yeah, she's so passionate, she's so bubbly, she's so sparkly, and she's so enthusiastic. And she was just chattering away. And again, it's one of these things that I do. I just have these ideas in my head. Then I'm like, right, we're going to run with it. And I said, I was like, Sian, I'm doing this conference called Women in COS. Do you want to come and speak at it? And she was like, what? Do you remember?
Little did I know what it would turn into. So I felt like I had Erica saying to me, it's going to be this really small thing. It'll be a really short talk. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. And then we're coming to January. And she's like, Sian, there's 120 people. I've never spoken in front of, you know, even 50 people before. So that was a huge thing for me to overcome. But to be honest, it was just so great to be involved, because I felt like when Erica was talking to me about this, I was also at that point, and I, you know, I still am, I'm going through my personal career journey. And I think from what I've seen in COS is that there's always a lot of change in our industry. And I think when I look back, for where everything started, you know, with the ACLD in the 80s, and then, you know, we've now got the CLSB, and you've got individuals who might have professional qualifications or, you know, fantastic experience and across professionals, there's a wide range of different experience and training that is amongst COS professionals. And I think what I had found, to more a bit of a negative note, I guess, from what I had found when I used to speak to my peers, was, you know, this kind of attitude of feeling undervalued, feeling at times a bit dismissed, overridden by clients, despite you being the COS professional and giving this advice. And I think, you know, there was also a lot of stories, and I know I used to hear them about, you know, you go into court and judges are going to say, you're a cost professional, I refuse to hear from you. And there's been quite a few stories like that, and I've got my own stories like that now. So you think about them things, and I guess when you then fast forward to where costs has come, you know, post Jackson, cost lawyers are now, you know, at the forefront of a lot of solicitor client issues, liaising with lay clients. We've gone from this back office role, in my opinion, to how it previously used to be, to now this forward facing role with a lot more advocacy opportunity in CCMCs and the lay client work. So for me, there was this aspect of like a missing skill set, and that skill set was soft skills. It wasn't technical ability. It was that, how do you speak to your clients, you know, having the confidence to speak to your clients and lead those conversations. And then I think partnering that with then why I became so passionate about it in relation to women is, again, through my, you know, personal development and my journey, is then, you know, reading different studies. And I think there was something that the British Psychological Society had put out about the gender differences between women on loss aversion, optimism, and attitudes towards risk. And it generally found that women focus a lot on what they could lose over what they can gain in risky situations. So when I, in my head, partner that with this changing world for costs professionals, I would feel that there's, you know, this real risk that women could get left behind by no one's fault, but just because we don't have the soft skills training opportunity, the community to support us and things like that. So when Erica came to me with this idea, I was 100% on board. I thought it was fantastic. And equally, Erica being so passionate about it, and for me as well, having worked with her, huge mentor to me, I knew she was going to be fantastic at delivering this message and the skill set and equipping people in our industry to go further in their career. So 100% for me, it was something I needed to be on board with.
I would probably suggest that if you were to go back 25 years or maybe not even that long, and you were to talk about costs, you would have an image in your mind of a person who operated in the world of costs. And that would probably be a slightly disheveled man. But were you both surprised by the amount of interest from the cost community for this? I mean, if you're getting 120, 140 people and you're expecting 10, that must have been a bit of a shock.
It was a huge shock. Yes, I was surprised. I was very surprised. But I don't think that necessarily, my surprise, I don't think speaks to the cost community's engagement in this. I think that speaks to my confidence in this. And that's one of the key aspects, certainly, that when you speak to a lot of different women, irrespective of their age, experience, place of work, there are a number of commonalities which link us all together. And a big one of those is confidence. And it's a confidence to be able to stand up and have our voices heard and say, actually, this is what I think is a good idea. You'll hear us preface a lot of what we say with, if that makes sense, or sorry to interrupt you on this, but I've just had a thought, what do you think about this, you know? And look, you can see our body language, we shrink into ourselves a lot of the time. I can see Kaylee nodding her head as I'm saying all of these things, that they're commonalities, aren't they, Kaylee?
They really are. I think I'm listening in awe at everything that you're saying, because it's just, I suppose, my own experience of, I've been pushed along in my career. So it's very much exactly how you've just said, oh, am I good enough? Can I do that role? Not necessarily a man, because again, like Lee, I'm really lucky that I work with a lot of strong women, and I've always had that support. But you always have that little bit of a fear of, can I push myself? Am I the right person to make that decision? Have I got any good ideas? And I think it's taken me years to get to a point where I'm confident enough in myself that actually I can say, even if it isn't a good idea, at least I've had an idea, and at least I've tried something. So I really admire what you two are, what you're trying to do.
Thank you. We do. We just want to, you know, there are a lot of different skill sets that, as people, and they're human aspects, because a lot of these issues are not peculiar to women, just that women go about things in different ways from men. We know this, and it happens from childhood onwards, and one can see the way that these differences manifest themselves across professions. I don't think that the Costlow Standard Board necessarily has ever actually done a survey or a report specifically on the effect of women in the profession. But for example, the Bar Council did one, and it was released just before Christmas. And it showed that actually at every level of career path, women get paid significantly less than men do. Women don't push themselves forward necessarily in the same way, in the same visibility that men do. And I know that I've done that myself in my career, and it particularly manifests itself around certain flashpoints. Coming back from mat leave is a really difficult time in our lives. It's bloody hard. You know, and I appreciate that's a generality. There may be some people that breeze through it and say, oh, I didn't have any difficulties at all. That wasn't my experience. I found it really difficult. And I know that a lot of women that I speak to have these difficulties, but it's this, a lot of it comes back to confidence levels within ourselves. And I think what you said, Kayleigh, just a moment ago was so interesting about how can I do this job? There are loads of studies out there that show that in order for women to put themselves forward for a position, we need to be 100% confident that we can do that. So we will make sure that we are almost overqualified before we step forward, and we'll take that risk and we'll take that leap. Men don't necessarily do that. They'll go, they're more happy to take risks. Yeah. They're less risk averse, I think, a lot of the time than what women are. And I was actually reminded of that this week. I had a mini pupil with me on Monday. And this girl's brilliant. She's fantastic. She's so sharp. She was measured in her what she was saying. She was so thoughtful. She was clearly very, very savvy. I liked her very much. I mean, we were talking about things, and she said, oh, I'm not sure actually if I can go to the bar, because I need to make sure I can do it before I apply for the course. And I said to her, like, no. That's what the course is for. You need to go on the course in order to learn. You don't need to be able to have all of these skills and do this job before you apply for the course. That's backwards. And, you know, she said, I need to be 100% sure I can do this. And, you know, I had this conversation with her about actually that's a lot of this confidence issues that we seem to have, is that we need to make sure we can do everything. And actually, you know, I look at the way that I treat my little boy as opposed to how I treat my niece. I think I use the example of climbing trees. If Ben wants to go and climb a tree at the bottom of the garden, I'm like, yep, go knock yourself out. Just make sure that where you put your feet, it's safe and you're not going to fall, and make sure that there is a somewhere for you to put your hands. So I give him the tools and allow him to do it for himself. When I'm dealing with Hannah, my niece, who's older, I have to say, Hannah, be careful. You know, make sure you don't fall. You may fall. And what I do is I talk to her about the bad things that can happen, which is exactly what Sian was saying a moment ago. And I highlight the bad things that can happen almost to try and talk her out of it. But when I'm dealing with my little boy, who's 2 years younger, I don't tell him about the bad things that can happen. I equip him with the ability to tell him what he needs to look out for in order to climb the tree. And this is very much what we were, Sian was talking about earlier, and Kayleigh, you're nodding your head again. It's how we get brought up, and it manifests later on in life.
It does, and I'm nodding my head because I think there's so many things you're saying that just stand out to me. And I think one of the really amazing things that you've just said that I think is such a good quality and something that I've tried to take on over the last few years, because I was lucky enough to have some professional coaching, was actually that ability to stand with someone who was in that, you know, in that little spiral of I can't do it, how can I do it, you know, I need to do this before I can do it, and actually just stopping someone and breaking it down into bite-sized chunks and actually giving them the confidence. And that's rare, you know, those people who actually are willing to stop, spend time and coach someone to improve them is really rare. And it's something that I had the benefit of that I'm now trying to use, mainly for the women in my management team who, again, doubt themselves, no disrespect to Lee, but, you know, it's all about learning those skills to then be able to pass on to that next person.
Yeah.
And hopefully then waterfalls down to the next layer of managers or the next person who's going to be heading up this business when, you know, I'm not there or you know, as we all move on.
Absolutely. And I'm absolutely thrilled to hear you say that, Kayleigh, because that is, that aligns so much with our vision, that that's what we want to do. We want to equip this generation and the next generation with, insofar as we can help, you know, give them access to developing these soft skills so that it then does have this waterfall effect, doesn't it? And it becomes infectious. And then it hopefully, you know, in the next, you know, few generations, we're going to have more of people coming through that acknowledge, yes, I have a confidence problem. Yes, that's absolutely normal. And this is what I can go and do to be able to develop that and address it and help myself. It's just equipping people with skills, isn't it?
It is. And I think there's also that selfish element as well for me, where you actually see one of those people and the confidence grow through you helping them. For me, I'm such a people person. You know, I know everyone in our business. I know about the families, and it's something that I'm really passionate about. But seeing one of those people and their confidence grow to a point where they don't have to come to you and ask for help or to make a decision, or actually, I've got this idea and I'm not going to say it might be rubbish. I've got this idea. And I think every time you see just a little creep of that person's just growing in themselves, selfishly for me, it just gives you that little bit of a, I suppose, a maternal element of what's in us. Do you know, like with your kids, where you see them do something new and you're just so happy inside that you see them growing.
And that's one of the things, actually, I see with Sian. I'm so proud of this woman. She is, in my mind, bloody amazing. She's just fantastic. And seeing her grow over the last couple of years, having done this, has been one of the proudest things of my life. And you came to me, Sian, do you remember about your idea for the rising star?
Yeah, and I think that was something actually I was about to say off the back of what you were both mentioning, is whilst you're in a place to obviously be able to share this training, and yes, Women in Cost is trying to share this training, the other aspect of it for, you know, individuals like me and a lot of other people in the cost profession is probably that role model element, is that for a lot of people in a lot of their places of work or in their lives, they don't have the role models to be able to say, oh yeah, you know what, someone like me can do this, and this is how somebody else has dealt with this. And I think it was Nikki Alderson mentioned it at our last conference, was the importance of role models, working with those role models, the mentoring. And I think that's exactly where the rising star comes into it. What we kind of decided and what we did for this conference was that we'd make that a opportunity for individuals in the cost community to apply for the opportunity to speak, which I don't think necessarily exists with any of the other conferences. And the importance of that is so individuals in that community have the opportunity to share their experiences, enable people to resonate with them, because that was huge for me when I finished my talk at the first Women in Cost. Was I got off stage and there's 120 people in the room, and I think majority of people came up to me and said, oh my god, I completely resonated with everything you just said to me. And yeah, sometimes I think this is going back to what Lee mentioned, there is sometimes a think of, oh, is it just me that thinks these things, or is it just me that's experiencing this? But then when you've got the opportunity to actually stand there and address something to a whole room full of like-minded individuals, you begin to realise you're one of many, and that's that community aspect. So giving the rising star position back to people in the community, giving them the opportunity to speak on topics that they think is relevant, I think is just so important to keep that bond between individuals that are attending and the message that you want to deliver. Because at the end of the day, it's about the community. It's about individuals in that community doing better and progressing.
For those that don't know, what is the rising star?
It's somebody under, I think, did we change it to 12 years? I think 10 or 12 years post-qualification experience, who has something to say, really, is what it is. So it's somebody junior who wants to develop their ability in public speaking, and they want to be seen, and they'll apply. And we had quite a few applications last year, and they'd have to do like a little synopsis, only 250 words, of what it is that they want to talk about and what they think will resonate with the community. And then there is a panel of us, there's me and Sian and Gaz, And I think we had Craig Ralph on it as well last year, because he's a massive mentor to me, hugely supportive, massive female ally. And we all sit down and decide who we think has got the best synopsis and who we think's got the best story to tell. And then we say they've been successful, and then they get up and then they do their talk for 45 minutes, just in the way that anybody else would do a talk at a conference. It gives them something to aim for, and it gives somebody the chance to achieve. And yeah, we know that if one looks at the conferences that we have, so the other conferences that operate in the cost sphere, they're usually at the other end of the work journey. They've achieved already, they've got the platform, hence the reason they're being invited to speak. What you don't really have is somebody at the junior end being given an opportunity to come and speak. And again, one of the reasons that I wanted to do it is actually I was given this opportunity when I was really young by Ian Stark. It was when I was in Peoplage, and we was an ACL conference. It was when we just had the ones in London. And typical King style, we'd obviously all of us been out the night before and got absolutely trolleyed as usual. And the next day, Mark Friston was meant to be talking, but Mark didn't come out with us after say. It wasn't that Mark had a hangover, he was genuinely poorly. Mark got sick halfway through the day before he'd done his talk, and he had to go off to the hospital. So Starkey comes and finds me and says, would you fill in for Mark? At which I'm still in pupillage, I'm hungover to hell. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. So I made up an excuse, and I thought it was a brilliant excuse. I was really proud of myself. I was like, oh, do you know what, Ian? It's not appropriate. My pupil master's here, putting it on Husing. My pupil master's here, and it would be really inappropriate for me as an absolute junior and non-tenant person to take that position. What really needs to happen is it needs to go to one of the more senior people, because that would be appropriate in these circumstances. So I thought that was it. I'd dealt with this problem and I'd dodged it. Starkey, being Starkey, wanted what he wanted and was going to get what he wanted, which was me to get on this bloody stage. So he went to Paul and said, I want Erica to speak. She said it's not appropriate. We go and tell her that it's all right. And Husey, being Husey, was like, also hungover, was like, absolutely, tell her it's fine. So I got dragged up to do this talk with 40 minutes prep. And it was when we had the big one. So I think it was about, there was a couple of hundred people in this room. So I'm hungover. I wasn't meant to be doing this. I've got 40 minutes prep and I get up and I have to do it. And I'm junior and I'm still in pupillage. And I get up and I have to do it because I don't have a choice. And I get thrown into it. And when you get thrown into it and you don't have a choice, you just have to get on with it, right? And you don't really think about it overly. But I was given this opportunity and it was incredible. And it immediately overcame a fear of, if I'd have had to sit and ruminate on that for 6 months, it probably would have driven me a distraction. But because I didn't have that and I just got thrown in, it was brilliant and I loved it. And you know, I've been very privileged to be have been invited to talk at numerous different conferences over the years, and I've always been extremely grateful actually for Ian putting me in that position and giving me that opportunity. So what I wanted to do was create something like that for the women in costs, and to have that rising star opportunity. But one of the proudest moments of my life, and Kayleigh, going back to what we were talking about earlier in this, you know, this maternal view that we tend to have, one of the proudest moments of my life was when Sian came to me and she's like, would you mind if I introduce the rising star? And I was like, Sian, that's a brilliant idea. She says, you know, I want this continuity. So like, that's a brilliant idea, absolutely, let's go for it. And she did, she introduced her, and it was one of the best feelings. I think somebody took a picture of me, didn't they, Sian? Yeah. Got this picture
looking at me
of
like
me.
A proud mum.
Yeah, looking at Sian like a proud mum as she's introducing Emma onto the stage. It was just a really beautiful moment. It was a really beautiful moment. We've got a picture of that, Sian, or was it that you saw me at the corner of your eye?
Picture. And I can send that over if anyone wants to.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, it was just really nice. So yeah, that's what the Rising Star is all about, Lee. It's about giving people at a junior level the opportunity to speak at a national platform and have the light shone on them for a change, rather than have the light shone on people who've already achieved. Yeah. And it can do wonders for their career progress, you know, putting it on their CV or on their appraisal forms or on their, you know, their CVs to get another job. You know, I've spoken at a national conference and this was the result. And, you know, we get loads of really nice feedback usually, don't we, Sean, on social media and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with Emma, especially this year, I think the way that she spoke about elements of her failures, her lessons, and, you know, she was talking about growth and grit mindset, the amount of people that fed back on how much they could relate to that and her feeling after it. It was just amazing to have been able to give someone that platform, because she did have a really good message to share. She had fantastic experience to share. And, you know, she isn't someone, and like I'm probably not someone that you would generally see on a lineup to speak at a conference. So to enable the community to hear these stories, I think is just amazing.
Excellent. So you start January 23, you've had that one, you've got another one coming up, which we'll talk about in a second. How do you see the future of Women in Costs going? I mean, I presume you've got lots of exciting plans.
Yeah, we do. So we started a mentoring programme last year, which was brilliant. We've got about 20 people in it, which we're really thrilled about. And everybody's on that who seems, certainly from what I've spoken to, people seem to be doing quite well with it. I'm really pleased that recently we've got Vicky Wainwright-Cook, who's at MRN. She's now heading up the mentoring programme because it just got, I've got lots of different hats to wear, and sorting out admin is not a skill set I particularly possess. I'm an ideas person. I'm not necessarily very good at organising things. It's not a strength of mine. So Vicky's on board now, and she's going to be heading up the mentoring programme and organising it. But we're going to be doing another one this year, probably starting in around September, October time. So it'll run for another 12 months and what I did last year was try and match up people from outside of their own firm so that they've got that external viewpoint to an external person to be able to go to and talk to. Because when we share ideas, in my opinion, that's when we get strength and when we get growth and when we get a lot of empowerment from the shared community and the shared ideas. So we've done that. And the brilliant Rebecca Bidwell, who was our leadership slot, our leadership person from January, who's obviously part of the Frenkel team, she has given us these she's amazing, she's just brilliant, and she's so good at development and people skills and growth. And she's allowed us to have these videos that Frenkels have created, and we're going to be releasing those in about July time. I think there's going to be one every month or so, and again about business development and soft skill training, building relationships, business analysis, so they're all going to be coming forward as well. And I've been invited to collaborate with the CLSB on women's issues and diversity issues, so I've got a conversation with them and a meeting coming up with them I think next month. And then we're just going to be building on to next year's conference, which will be again the last week in January next year. And we've just been bouncing around some ideas, haven't we, Sean, about who we want to talk about. But in future, and ideally what I'd like to grow it towards, is I want to create it as a proper association, so be formal. I'm not quite sure how I go about doing this. This is you know, big sky thinking. I want it to create an association so that people can be members of it. And then ideally what I'd really like to do is grow it so that it's self-sufficient. And then ideally I want to back away from it and somebody else can be appointed to be the chairperson, just in the same way somebody gets appointed the chairperson of the ACL. I'd like somebody, you know, to have it so it's that big, so that I can pass it on to the next generation, and then it can be the professions then, and it can be run however anybody who gets elected thinks that for their generation is what it needs. So something that stands on its own two feet rather than be intrinsically linked to me is what I'd like.
If you get 140 people on your first one, I imagine you're looking at doubling that.
Yeah, well, we had the first obviously in 2023, and then we had the same amount of people. We went to a bigger venue, and we had, so people didn't have to get squidged in, but it was still 140, 150, I think, capacity. Somebody told me, actually, it was really sweet. They said it was easier to get Taylor Swift tickets than it was to get to the Women in Costs conference this January. I'm not sure about that. I know how hard I've tried to get Taylor Swift tickets and still failed. Yeah, Gaz, again, we wouldn't be anywhere without Gaz, my clerk. He is I'm Katie as well at King's, the marketing manager. She's brilliant. And those two really do run it behind the scenes. They do a lot of work. You know, Sian and I come up with these ideas and then Sian
they just make it happen. They just
exactly.
It happen so seamlessly.
Gav just makes things happen. He's brilliant. He's absolutely fantastic. And he's such a supporter, isn't he, Sian?
He's so passionate.
He's so enthusiastic. And he's a real mental health advocate as well. He's on, I head up the wellbeing committee. Well, I'm joint head of the wellbeing committee at King's. And Gaz is on that committee with me as well. And he's such an advocate for mental health and training and development. But yeah, things wouldn't happen without him at all. So yeah, he and I and Katie are going to go around and find venues later on. I said it's like me and Gaz are looking for a wedding venue. It's like we're looking for a wedding venue because there were some things that we weren't that happy about last year, wasn't there, Sian, at the venue. The venue the year before was absolutely brilliant and perfect, but it was a bit small. So it's a little bit like Goldilocks. We're going to keep going around until we get exactly what we want.
Yeah, really great to just get more numbers and create more seats for people. Yeah,
because one of the things as well, and this is why it's a bit tricky trying to find a venue, is that the price point for the conference, we're really keen to keep it as low as we can. We want to keep it around the under £50 mark in order to get a ticket, because what we've noticed and what we noticed in the room was that there were so many young people in the room. The delegate age was really low, and it's hugely encouraging to see that firms are willing to send their juniors through, because that's the target audience that we want. Those are the people that we want in the room so that we can develop them and grow them. Whereas when you look at the other conferences, what you tend to see is that it's very male dominated because it's very senior led. And that makes sense because the tickets are so expensive. You're not going to be able to send 10 of your juniors when you're paying £350 a ticket. And that's not to criticize any of the other conferences. You know, they're on a different marketing platform and they have a different target demographic than we have, but we're targeting the juniors. We want them through the door. So in order to get them through the door and to have the numbers that we want to have through the door, not because we want great numbers, but because we want to access as many people as we can, we need to keep the price point low so that instead of sending one person at 350, we can send 10 at 35. But that, of course, has a knock-on effect on how much we can spend on a venue. But we've been really fortunate and we've had a lot of good sponsors who've been really supportive. And we've got some great sponsors. Owen Mitchell, massive support. And they're fantastic, aren't they, Sian? They're really good.
Definitely.
You mentioned earlier about Craig Ralph and the support he provides, the mentoring role he provided. And it just makes me think, you have this conference coming up with however many hundreds of people. For anybody who's listening to this who's not a woman, would you say that it would necessarily, it's not, the doors aren't closed to them, because you want, I imagine you'd want a selection of people there, because it's not just about it's primarily obviously about women, but men shouldn't feel that this is it's not nothing for me, I shouldn't be involved because it's a woman thing, because they can get a lot of benefit from it by way of learning the issues that you want to bring to the forefront by gaining some understanding that they may not necessarily have. So it's not just a case of, you know, or is it? But is it? I didn't think it was a case of men aren't allowed, because I do recall when Tracy turned up, she said there were a few guys there who you don't want to intrude, but you want to learn. You want to understand the issues. You don't want to be excluded and then be ignorant of them.
I think Eric has definitely had some comments about, is WIC anti-men? And I think I also had someone say to me, I can't come to WIC because I'm not a feminist. And just to completely put that on the record, you know, that's not what WIC is about. It's not a political, it's not an agenda. We, you know, unfortunately, I think we live in this world where apparently you support one thing becomes anti another, but that's absolutely not the case here. From the male delegates that we have had attend, we've had some fantastic feedback from male managers, you know, that have said that from attending WIC and understanding, say, challenges that women face and some of the topics that have been discussed enables them to be a better manager, to be able to support their team members or their colleagues, you know, through things that they may experience. And even for me, to be honest, I think one of our first conference, Emma, Kate, spoke about menopause. And, you know, because of my age group, that's something I don't really know about. And that's me as a woman. So imagine a man tending that doesn't know much about that. And, you know, you go away and you learn so much that you wouldn't ordinarily learn about, you know, different people's different walks of life. So definitely it's not a anti-man environment. You know, collaboration in this is so important, because, you know, it's creating and equipping people with the right tools. And especially, I think, if you're a man in management, those things are really important for you to be able to support your team.
I think that's really interesting as well, because ironically, I do recall when the menopause point came up, because one of our managers came back and spoke about it. And then not long after, one of my team encountered that issue. And I think had I not had that conversation with Tracy, or understood the issue with Tracy beforehand, I would have done that almost traditional hardwired male response of, oh my God, I don't know anything about that. I'm just going to retreat from the point because I'm confused by these words. Whereas having had that conversation, I wouldn't necessarily say I managed it brilliantly. I'm not going to go that extreme. But I felt a little bit more comfortable dealing with the issue because it had been aired openly, which is not something I'd been.
Because there's a level of education, I guess, from when you start speaking about stuff, you become a bit more educated, you become a little bit more informed, so you can actually offer someone some support instead of exactly what you're saying. You go in a bit blind and it's a lot more difficult to deal with things.
Exactly.
I think for us as well, though, Lee, that really helps us having men and women in the management team, because usually what we find is we can field between us if an issue comes up, and actually one of us has probably experienced that at some point throughout our careers. So that support is massively helpful when dealing with staff.
100%. I'm conscious of the time, so I'm just going to try and wrap us up. What would you say to any women or men who want to be more involved with women in costs?
I'd say come along to the conferences. Come along to the conferences and see what we're about. Come and see what it is that we do, and hopefully you'll experience the positive, uplifting, empowering environment that we seem to be able to create. And we've certainly created, or I've been told we've created it for the last 2 years. You know, the energy in the room is palpable. It's brilliant. So come along and get involved by coming to the conference and support our mentoring scheme. That would be fantastic as well, whether you're somebody who has something to offer as a mentor. And again, I've a lot of the questions I had when I set the mentoring scheme up was, oh, I've only been in COST 20 years. I'm not sure I've got anything to share, but this is something I'd like to do. Again, it comes back to that confidence thing of everybody's got something to share. You know, we, like Sian said, it's an educational process. We can all learn from each other by we're only going to learn by creating these connections with each other. So anybody that thinks that, you know, that they've got something to share and they can benefit somebody else, I am certainly never going to turn anybody away who wants to take up that mantle and take up that role. And equally, you know, I've had quite otherwise what you would probably consider senior people say to me, I'd actually quite like to be mentored because I find X, Y, and Z difficult. So irrespective of, I've embraced them again and found somebody that I hope that they would match up with quite nicely in terms of skill sets. Mm-hmm. I do put a lot of effort, and I know that Vicky's going to put a lot of effort into trying matching people's up on the mentoring scheme. I spent a lot of time on that last year trying to marry those things up. So if you want to get involved and you want to be mentored, it's not about achieving great things if that's not what you want to do. If you just want to, if something's you're finding difficult in your work life and it's having an impact on you and you're not necessarily finding internally works in your internal workspace that you have at the moment the support that you would ideally want, then come along to WIC. It may be something that we can help you with on our mentoring scheme by putting you in contact with somebody else external to your firm. And again, if nothing else, you're going to hopefully be part of a community that is expanding and is supportive and wants you to succeed and wants the best for you. I think that's really where we are at the moment. Like I said, we are looking to expand the structure, I think, really is probably what we need to call it, Sian, isn't it? To have more of a formal structure. But equally, like I said, I've got a lot of different hats to wear, and finding the time for these things sometimes can be a bit tricky. yeah, you can, you know, Gaz is constantly getting cross at me going, where do you want me to fit these things in? What am I meant to be doing with all this? I think my next available date, I was talking to you yesterday, Sian, was I think my next available date is something stupid like the middle of September. So yeah, it can be a bit tricky, but anybody that wants to get involved, anybody who wants to get involved, we'd be delighted, wouldn't we, Sian, to yeah. have them. And so anything else that you think we can do?
I just think a good message, especially around the Rising Star stuff, is just team managers or people in senior positions mm-hmm. actively recognizing the talent in their team. So now you know that this position is always going to be there for, you know, a long time, because we're going to be having conferences for a long time. And maybe preparing people to stand in those spots, helping people, you know, come up with the right topics and how they might want to apply for the position, and supporting them to do that, because I think that's really important. It takes a lot of confidence in the first place to probably be able to put one of these applications in and commit to speaking in front of, you know, a few hundred people. So I think definitely in the background, individuals having the support from their managers and having the plan to apply for these positions with their managers and things like that, I think is going to prove really helpful and hopefully ensure long-term success of that. Because the best thing we can do is see engagement, so enough people get the opportunity to speak, you know, in that slot.
I think that's brilliant. Absolutely right. I think Sian's spot on.
We normally end with a selection of tips, but I don't know if you want to maybe summarize one or two parting comments, any tips, any points of guidance you would want to share. If you could share one or two things, what would they be?
The big thing for me about succeeding in life or getting on in life is about building relationships. It's critical to everything, whether you want to progress in your professional life or you want to, you know, improve in that work-life balance, particularly as a working mum, because it's really, really hard. And also, you know, for men, actually, I think it's quite hard too. My husband works part-time. He went part-time so that we can manage the childcare with him. And he found that initially a bit of a daunting prospect to speak to his employer about I am a man and I need to work part-time so I can do the childcare at home. That was a difficult conversation for him to have. But, you know, we worked through it, and it was because he had good relationships with his employer that he felt able ultimately to be able to take that leap of faith and have that discussion with them. And equally, if I didn't have that support at home from him and his encouragement and his, you know, he's a massive cheerleader. If I didn't have all of that, I wouldn't be able to do all these different, wonderful, incredible things that I'm so fortunate and blessed to have the opportunity to do. And when you distill everything down, even in my work life, you know, I've got Craig Ralph, as I've said, is a huge supporter. I often tell Gaz that actually he's my work husband, you know, and I wouldn't be able to do any of these things if I didn't have that support. And, you know, the support from Sian and as a friend, you know, she started out as a client, but she is a great friend of mine, and the great support that I have from all of my clients as well. And it doesn't really matter, I think, which aspect you pick, but what underpins all of these things is good relationship building. And it's so important for progression, as I've said, but also well-being at home and also, you know, mental health well-being as well. It underpins everything. And I think anything that is an investment in how you can manage yourself and how you can manage other relationships around you, it is ultimately, I think, always going to end in a more fruitful and positive life for yourself. And so there, that's my top tip, to build on relationship management and relationship building.
I think that nicely crosses over with what I was going to say, because I think my top tip for cost professionals, especially women, is to, you know, abolish this black and white idea of what a cost professional or a successful lawyer looks like. And this was something that I spoke about at the first conference, was about heart strengths and character strengths, and, you know, a study as to the most successful female lawyers, I think, in America, found place for heart strengths, which are typically female type characteristics or skills in their profession, which enabled them to succeed. And I think in costs, I think for me, my advice would be is, you know, think about the wider aspects of your role, kind of like what Erica was saying with relationships. You know, yes, you may draft bills, but it doesn't mean that you are just a bill drafter, because you will still have other legs to your role. You're still involved in business development somewhere. You're still involved with firm relationships. You're still involved in your own career direction and your team relationships. And there are so many avenues in which you can inject your natural strengths and some of your female character strengths and embrace them, instead of having this, you know, black and white image of I just need to be the, you know, the usual, or maybe my role doesn't mean so much and things like that. Look at the complete picture and find a way to bring your authentic personality to the table and let things flourish naturally to go, yeah, in a positive direction or get career satisfaction.
From my perspective, I have to say it's actually quite inspiring how passionate you both are about this. I've got no doubt whatsoever it's going to go from strength to strength.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's just been amazing to listen to you both talk. I think I could sit here for hours and hours and talk about all the different topics that you've probably covered at all the different conferences that you've had and what you will do moving forward. So, yeah, just I'm interested to see where it goes and hopefully be involved maybe at some point.
Come be involved, we want all the people we can get. But yeah, thank you both of you, that's really kind. It's really nice to get that nice feedback in it, Sean, that
definitely is.
Well, thank you both for giving up your time today for this chat around an issue that is incredibly important to you both, to Partners in Cost, to the cost industry as a whole. So thank you to the boss for not leaving me to look like an idiot in the headlights when faced with two people far cleverer than me. And thank you both for giving us your valuable time. It's massively appreciated. And I think on behalf of PIC, we do wish you all the best for Women's in Cost moving forward.
Thank you.
I feel like I need to clap at the end of that, Lee. I feel like that deserves a
little. I think my delivery was off, but you know, I'm not trained. What can you do?
That was fantastic. I thought
really good.
That actually just made me feel like it's real Stephen Bartlett.